There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby. That's right. This man knows what's up.
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have y'all along and easy to get in touch with the show. Two ways, one number. 251-343-0106. 251, which I've been keeping up with that. That was my New Year's resolution to start using the area code. 251-343-0106. Call or a text. And with the FM Talk 106.5 app, you can even send us one of those talkback messages. You'll see the microphone icon on the front page, landing page of the app. If you press that, lets you record a message, emails it to the show, and I can play it back here on the air. All right, this hour and our guest, and good to get this man in studio. It's been, well, I think last time he was in studio, he wasn't yet mayor of the city of Mobile. Yeah. It's Mayor Spiro Chirigatis. Good to see you.
Hey, everybody. Hey, Sean.
Good to see you, Mayor. We're, what, 100?
Yeah, I kind of quit doing the math. About 4 months.
Okay, there we go. I can talk 4 months. 4 months in as mayor of our fair city. So, I mean, I could ask you, and I will. I'll ask you some cliche questions right off the bat here on that. And, like, when you took office, what did you think the job was, and what is it? And what you would say, and like when you came in, you obviously you had talked to Mayor Stimson, you'd been campaigning, so you knew parts of it. But like, something surprised you, something stood out that you didn't see coming.
Well, you know, I think everybody like sees the mayor out, and you're at these events, you're cutting ribbons, and so that's kind of what you see. But nobody really sees the behind the scenes meetings, all the things that you're doing, and I don't think there's any way to really prepare you for just how much the city does, just how many decisions the mayor needs to make. So, you know, I won't say that was a surprise, the sheer volume of it. I feel like everybody from the beginning said, you'll be drinking from a fire hose.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I told people it was more like straight from the fire hydrant, you know.
Okay.
We didn't skinny it up with a hose. It was just hitting me from all sides at all times. But, you know, I'm enjoying it. And I'll tell you, I hadn't been bored one day.
Right.
I'm enjoying the job, enjoying, you know, thinking of all the ways we can improve our city, move our city further forward. So it's been fun. You know, it's taxing. I don't have as much free time as I used to, but that's okay.
But I imagine, just guessing, you could, yes or no, you get more efficient at it. Longer that fire hydrant analogy you're making, you get better at doing the thing, and maybe that same volume, but you deal with it better.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, you know, there's no way to do it all yourself. It is the team, and we've got a great team, and I think, you know, a lot of that team was there before me, and we're all kind of adjusting to each other, and we're getting more proficient each and every day. So it's been fun. I'll tell you, I love being a part of a big team. We got a lot of people that love the city of Mobile and want to make it better. And, you know, we agree most of the time, and if we don't, I get the last say.
It's true. That's what that comes with the job there. Let's talk about some of the priorities coming in for you and kind of like, you know, the back of the envelope list here, like things you're working on, top priorities.
Many, you know, it is continuing to develop our economy. We need a robust economy if we're going to be able to invest in the fun things that we want to invest in. So it is making sure our economy is continuing to grow, making sure we've got the infrastructure in place to support that. But on the fun side, you know, we've got to activate our waterfront. We've made so many public investments in our waterfront with the convention center, cruise terminal, Cooper Riverside Park, Maritime Museum. You know, we need to create an environment where that private investment can really come in. And so, you know, when you look north of the convention center, there's a hotel, office space, condo component planned.
Yeah, that, and I know that was announced some years ago. Is that still on track for happening?
Continuing to move. You know, I think people want to know exactly what the environment down there is going to be if they're going to invest hundreds of millions of dollars. And I do think that that group sees a prerequisite of their investment to be the reimagination of Water Street. Water Street is kind of that impassable barrier to our waterfront from the downtown entertainment structure. And so we've got to reimagine how pedestrians specifically can get across Water Street without, you know, fighting with 18-wheelers coming off at high speed, coming off I-10 at high speed or even 165. And we're doing that. You know, recently as a city, partnering with the engineering team and our big projects folks like Jen Green, we've come up with a conceptual idea of how we can reimagine Water Street, continue to allow traffic there, including truck traffic, shrinking that traffic down to two lanes instead of the six
I know you had spoken. You had spoken
lanes.
About that before in a press conference or something I had read. How does that work? Like,
you know, you've got to allow the traffic to flow a little freer, so it'll probably mean less traffic lights.
Okay.
It'll mean, you know, we'll take away some left turns onto Water Street off of certain side streets.
Okay.
If you're coming off of I-10 in our current configuration, the first street light you'll hit will actually be at St. Louis Street.
Okay, so it won't be government.
It won't be government. Okay. So, because that government right now, if you ever are exiting off of the eastbound lane, taking a left onto government, that backs up. And it backs up onto that off-ramp in a potentially dangerous way. So I think it's something that needs to be addressed anyway. There are so many ways to access downtown now. You know, we redid Canal Street, Broad Street, Beauregard on the backside. So there are ways around downtown if you want to go around it, but then back on the 165, you can cut up and go by the new arena on Claiborne. There are so many ways to access downtown, and so we're just trying to change that behavior a little bit, not take away the option. But I do want less people driving on Water Street. I want more people walking on Water Street, walking through a beautiful park, you know, a place that maybe we have some cafe tables and food trucks set up. Maybe it's a great garden that you can sit in and get a little peace from your work day. You know, I hope that this area will become kind of the gateway, not just to the waterfront, but into downtown also. And really just make that a usable space that people that are visiting or who live here have some nice green outdoor space they can run in, walk in, bike in, and feel safe doing it.
You know, I think about that. And by the way, on the Maritime Museum, I'm the most up on it I've ever been with Buffett and the Delta. Now, you know, I'm going, okay, not that containerized shipping is not very important to our city, but if I got people coming in, I'm like, hey, let's go look at containerized shipping. They're like, let's go look at the Delta and Jimmy Buffett. They're like, okay, cool. Right. Yeah. So that's going to be a positive. But it's like, even with your predecessor, I talked with him about this. We are a working port. You know, people say, well, you have a waterfront. People always tell me, well, San Antonio's got to. I said, yeah, but San Antonio's not bringing ships in and unloading them. And like, we have real. So it's this interface you're talking about, but there's real harbor stuff going on there at the same time.
For sure, which, you know, makes recreational boat traffic a little difficult. Yeah. You know, that's something I'd like to see. We've got to do that safely. We don't want to impede what's happening at the port. But, you know, you look at Savannah. You know, I would say we can catch up to where Savannah is in 10 years, and they've got an active working waterfront. You know, just the other day, I had a meeting council, which is one of my new favorite things. You know, give me a little extra free time in the day.
But, yeah.
And so I was leaving the Maritime Museum, and I just took a walk along the waterfront, checked on that Cooper Riverside project that we're in the middle of, walked over to the convention center and just kind of just watched the water, looked what was happening, you know, imagined what it's going to be like. But I thought, like, how many people have actually even done this? How many people have walked along this stretch of waterfront and just enjoyed what's happening out here because it's cool? And, you know, I would say the water's beautiful. You can kind of peek through to the bay, but you can see these Austal ships being built. I expect more activity over there. You see these massive container ships coming through, roll off, vehicle transport ships and the Airbus ship coming through. that's cool stuff to watch.
It is. I guess it takes looking at it a different way, because a lot of us will take things for granted. Well, that's going on down there, but I'm going to go do something over here to the west of there, and the two worlds don't meet. But
it is part of an overall goal to make our city more connected, too. You know, there are a lot of neighborhoods that sometimes feel disconnected. You got kids that are going to school out at South for 4 years, and they only come down to downtown a handful of times.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love for downtown to have a little bit of a college, feel.
Yeah.
I'd love to see those people downtown enjoying it, spending a little money, a little more tax dollars. So making the community more connected and making our waterfront more connected with our city.
I want to talk about the connectivity when we come back from the break, because there's something you talked about when you were campaigning. And when I first heard it, I said, what is he talking about? And then thinking about it and just kind of analyzing it for myself and my friend group, the idea of a trolley versus a bus. And I went, maybe he's onto something. Coming right back. More with Mayor Terry Gattis right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:20, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have y'all along, and good to have an hour to hang out here with Mobile Mayor Spiro Chirigatis. Jason says, pass along an attaboy to the mayor. After several attempts with 311, I emailed him directly about a trashy intersection on Moffitt in Crichton, and it was taken care of within a couple of days. Thank you.
Hey, that's part of my job, because we want to put these mechanisms in place where people can let us know what's going wrong, and in the end, large systems fail at times. So happy to jump in when there needs to be a little extra attention on something, highlight an issue, and happy to be able to help him.
Okay, let's also talk transportation, in that infrastructure. When you were campaigning, you started talking about trolleys, and I got to tell you, I rolled my eyes. I said, it was trolleys. And then I started trying to think about this. Would I get on a bus? And I wouldn't, but I'd get on a trolley and talk to friends of mine. We take a trolley. They do the same dang thing. I don't know what the difference is, but good for you coming up with that idea.
I don't know why it works, but it works, and it's worked in other areas. If you look at the country, public transportation is not meant to make money, and it doesn't make money in any city in the country except for one, San Francisco.
Is that where it does?
San Francisco, the San Francisco trolleys that people come from around the world to catch a ride on.
Even if they don't have to go, they get on them to just go.
Yeah, they're iconic, and I think, Mobile used to have a great trolley network. You can still find the map. And it harkens back to a time where that was more usable, reliable transportation. Let's bring a little bit of that back. Let's bring that feel back. And frankly, let's make it fun. It needs to be fun. If you have the option of driving in your car, getting straight to where you're going, you're not probably going to choose something that might take a little longer unless it's fun. Unless it's enjoyable, unless it's safer, because maybe like you you have a couple extra drinks at dinner and you don't want to drive home. So I think it needs to have a little bit of that fun component to it.
Speaking of transportation efficiency versus the intangibles of it, the numbers coming in for Amtrak have been something.
Amazing.
I mean,
incredible. And, we want to bring cruises in. We want to bring people to our city, new airport. The number of people that are coming in on that Amtrak and just walking around, spending time, having lunch, having coffee, having a drink, spending a little money in some of our shops. I would love to see more retail downtown, retail brick and mortar struggles in our country. But that's how you do it. You get the people to it. You bring the people there. And Amtrak, I think if you would have, I haven't heard their latest projection, but I would say I know they met a year's projection in half the time, in 6 months. So,
and they're adding cars for during Mardi Gras they added cars. I think on Sundays for Saints games they added cars. So,
I'd like to see that be permanent, as long as we keep filling them up. And between us, Mississippi, and folks coming over from New Orleans, we're filling these trains up.
Yeah, the city, and when this was discussed, when council talked about it, I had my worries because I worry about forever debt. but saying, here's the money commitment. It's a three-year window. It seems like, as we sit here now, knock on for Micah in the studio, that we get it going. It's in itself, you know, it's self-perpetuating.
You know, if you look around, I think most states do subsidize train traffic.
Yeah, not Alabama. Train.
You know, we'll talk, though. I think with the success we're seeing, I hope it's a conversation we can have again, revisit. You know, I, of course, I want it to be self-sustaining, just like I want our local transit network to be self-sustaining. That's always going to be the goal. But in the end, it's all dollars and cents. And if I can show that the return on investment is hugely positive, like I believe it is on this Amtrak investment, there's no reason not to continue doing it.
Yeah, I did my own investigation, not through economics department at South or anything, but a friend of mine who is a owner of establishments downtown, and he tells me, he's like, there are people here from out of town, Sean, coming in, getting sandwich and getting a beer and, you know, doing that. So
I bump into them downtown. When I get a chance to walk around, I bump into people who don't recognize me, which is my first, you know, tell that they might not be from here. But between that and then we just had our first riverboat cruise. So there's the American cruise lines.
Yeah, the one that's coming down the coast here.
Yeah, and they look, they're high-dollar, high-spending folks. They come and take tours of our towns. They have excursions in Mobile, which I've asked for the list, and I plan on going on some of them. But, you know, that's what we want. We want people – I made it up, I think, but, you know, come visit Mobile, fall in love. We've got a city that I think people fall in love with, and any way we can get them here, I'm for it.
You know, you mentioned – you used two words, brick and mortar, earlier, which got me thinking – of course, where we sit in the city of Mobile with this SSUT, the discussion going on. I know Senator Albritton talking about changing some of the, from 10-year to 5-year. Where do we sit? Where's Mobile's perspective on this?
You know, my goal, I didn't become mayor to sue the state. I can tell you that.
Right.
You know, that wasn't my goal. But my goal in entering that lawsuit was to be sure that I had a seat at the table, Mobile had a seat at the table when it came time for negotiations, because I knew it would, inevitably. And we got there a little quicker than I expected. You know, Senator Albritton has his things. He needs to protect the general fund. Mm-hmm. And we want a state that is robust and healthy and can invest in the things we need to invest in. So the negotiations are ongoing. I think they're positive. I think this bill that was introduced by Senator Albritton is a great olive branch, in my opinion.
It's an olive branch because it's to hold you over. It's not what you want. I mean, just reducing from 10 years to 5 years, that's not.
I don't think that's
a whole enchilada,
fix.
Right?
Okay. No, I don't think that's an ultimate fix at all. But it would give Mobile, in Mobile's case, credit for the annexation and expansion of the city that's happened recently, you know, since the last census. And instead of waiting 10 years to have your accurate population numbers counted.
Yeah, it's going to come up next year, right?
It would be next year, I believe. So hoping that continues. It's hit some snags, you know. Uncertainty creates anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And what that would do to different municipalities and counties' budgets, even on that fair and accurate population count, is something that people are worried about. So I hope it continues to progress forward. I want to see Mobile get credit for the people that we do have, even under the current system, which I find to be extremely flawed for many reasons. But what I'm thankful for is Senator Albritton coming to the table, others coming to the table to find a real long-term solution.
Okay, so that's while the olive branch now, the 10 to 5 year change, but there's more discussion on this. Am I reading that correctly?
It has to be. You know, the way that it is, internet taxes are collected, it's a use tax, but it is. It's based on things that you buy and sell on the internet. My preference would be for that to be linked to where the product is delivered.
Mm-hmm.
That is what many states do. I think over 33 states now do it based on zip code. They can even get it down to the address level. The software exists now where it didn't when we created this law. We created the law to make it simple to collect some tax for the sellers to benefit the area. But as brick and mortar does suffer based on the increase in internet sales, a city is almost nearly 100% funded by sales tax.
Yeah.
And if we don't find a long-term fix for this, it's going to impact our fire department, our police department, our ability to fix roads, fill potholes. And that, you know, to me is scary. I don't live on fear, but we've got a plan for the future. And in the future, people are going to keep buying things off the internet.
All right, coming right back with Mayor Jared Gattis right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. The segment of the show brought to you by my buddy Clint Jameson at Adventure Earth Bicycles. So he sent me this note last week. Hey, Sean, we're receiving a shipment of Big Sur Fat Tire Turkey Hunt e-bikes. And I argued with my buddy Clint. We've known each other long enough to do that. I said, well, you can hunt other stuff off them and do things. But he said, yeah, these are the off-road specials, like the bike that got me into biking, 3 years ago when I got an e-bike from him. He said, these are the hottest thing out there. Big Sur's Fat Tire Hunting e-bike. Regular price, $2,500. Right now, $1,750. Fat Tire e-bike with the 750-watt motor, 48-volt battery. All assembled. That's a nice thing, too. Local company, local folks, bike freaks like Clint and everybody there. When you buy the bike, you don't get a box with parts in it. You get a bike that's been put together, tuned, everything's ready to go. He said, yeah, we're assembling the rear rack, fenders, and gun rack that come on this, and you can get them right now for $1,750, plus large assortment of e-bikes just came in as well. He said, whether you're looking for getting out on the road or having fun around the campground or the beaches, e-bikes in stock from Eufree, Denago, Magnum, Big Sur, Fuji, and Aventon. 50 e-bikes ready to roll at any time. He said, we got your new bike in stock and assembled. Fun thing is, too, go to Adventure Earth Bicycles. You can take it for a test ride. Find the e-bike that's right for you. You just got to go by and take that test ride. And plus, as he often points out, 400 of the Amish bikes in stock, the non-e-bikes at any point as well. And everything that goes on them, you can check them out at Adventure Earth Bicycles, corner of Little Flower and Airport in Midtown, kind of catty-cornered across from Ruth's Chris, and online at adventure-earth.com, Adventure Earth Bicycles. Everything inside to get you outside. All right, continue our conversation with Mayor Jared Gattis. I get some text as well. Let's see here. This will you continue? This is from Tim. Asked the mayor, would he continue Sandy Stimson's plan to reduce the units for Mobile Housing Board and move those people to the west?
Say that again. Reduce the units inside Mobile and move people to the west.
He said, if you plan to reduce the units for the Mobile Housing Board and move those people to the west. So I don't know.
Well, you know, the housing board itself is only about 5 people. I don't think that's what he's asking. Do I plan to increase housing inside the city limits of Mobile, specifically east of 65? I do.
Okay.
I do. The revitalization efforts for some of our aging, older neighborhoods, I think it's key as we're attracting large jobs, large companies. They want to know where their workforce is going to live, mm-hmm. and we've got to have workforce housing that working families can afford. So
bingo. There's problem, because I could tell you I could build some housing here in the city, be real nice, but I don't know who might be able to afford it.
Unless you're a millionaire, you can't afford it in some cases. So we've got to have... You know, we got to right size that. And I do think that's creating a bigger mix of the availability of the types of housing. So, yes, we're going to have single family housing. Yes, we're going to have apartments and condos. I really like that. I call it middle housing, but you're talking about townhomes.
Okay.
You know, quadplexes, things like that, where it's a lower cost of entry for somebody that wants to own their own place.
Mm-hmm.
But it still feels like home. It's not just an apartment. It's something a little different. Mm-hmm. So you see that work in a lot of places. I really love to see townhomes and condo complexes growing up around retail, too. That's mm-hmm. kind of a mixed-use development that's working in a lot of cities.
Is there real estate available in those places in the city? I mean,
you know, we're doing a lot to try and aggregate that, you know, through land banking and other things. A developer's going to need a good swath of land to build something like
right.
that. Their model is not going to allow anything other than, hey, we've got 10 acres and you can set up shop here. So we need to do a good job of that. A lot of that is like clearing title. Some of it is taking action on some of the liens and things we have with what we have in Mobile. It's an old city. And so you had great grandmother's house that was inherited by, now owned by 19 cousins who probably don't even know they have, some of them don't even know they have an interest in it. They don't even know it's out there. And so we're engaging with certain people, law firms in some cases, to help us clear title, pick up larger swaths of land that can then be turned over to a developer and developed.
I want to talk about this too, as we're talking about building and infrastructure. When the headline came out, I read from LandYap and I kind of stumbled through it. I still can't say it. So this is a public project. On time and under budget?
I know.
The arena, like this is, I feel weird saying it because I'm like, I'm going to regret saying it, but I mean, this is...
It continues to grow.
So why? I mean, why can't we have done this before? I love this. I dig this. I love hearing words like that.
You know, could it have happened before? Maybe. Have we gotten better at how we do things? Probably. Look, we've got, Sam Matheny at Volkert is our project manager. I have a meeting with him once a month. He has a meeting with, our permitting department and other necessary departments once a week. We get everybody in the same room. Hey, where are we at with this, that, and the other? And it is tracking it. It's pushing where it needs to be pushed. It's, you know, at one point, if you've seen it up there, we have these, they call it cementitious panels, but it's the brick paneling. I know. I learned that word as mayor. But they put brick, it's actual brick, in molds, and they pour concrete over it so that you have, or cement over it, so that you now have one piece. This one large 20-foot tall, 10-foot, 12-foot wide.
Instead of putting in brick by brick.
Brick by brick, which would take infinitely more time.
I like this. Okay.
And if you can go see it right now, the bulk of the lower level of the arena is now wrapped with this brick. But we were a little behind on receiving those. I don't know why. And so we had to move up the timeline on certain other pieces of the project so that we wouldn't lose time overall in the overall construction. That takes a lot of attention. It takes a lot of management. I give Sam all the credit and our team at Build Mobile. They're doing a great job.
So in other words, you didn't have the stuff in to do this. So instead of everybody just standing around looking at their boots, you say, well, let's get started with this stuff.
Yeah.
And like you would do in a private sector build.
B.L. Harbert's contractor, they built a lot of very large buildings, you know, at Auburn and other places. They know what they're doing. Having a contractor that has experience makes it that much easier. It's just a great team, you know, between our team at the city with the contractor with Volkert. It has been a beautiful thing to watch.
Now, I've grabbed a text here. This one from, I think this is, maybe unnamed texter here. Please, Mayor, do something about the homelessness in Tillman's Corner.
It's not just in Tillman's Corner, but it is kind of everywhere. And we're doing it. You know, we have our homeless outreach team. Kendall does a great job in really knowing these folks. I think we have to get creative. The Supreme Court limited our ability to criminalize panhandling. You know, and you got some folks that are aggressive. You got people walking in and out of the roadways
here.
Shopping centers.
Yeah.
You know, what I want to do, you know, I read the good book and I believe in treating people even at their lowest state with dignity and care and respect. But you got some folks out there that we have programs, we have opportunities to exit this way of life and we want to help. And when we find those folks that aren't interested, that want to continue, you know, detracting from our ability to do business and, you know, people's quality of life, you know, I think we need to help some of those folks move on.
Mm-hmm.
But we're, Supreme Court's ruling really limited us that, you know, asking for money is free speech. I think it depends on how you ask, for one thing. We are finding creative ways to address this issue in every way that we can. And we're working with our community partners. We got a lot of community partners with those good hearts, right, that want to feed people, that want to help them get clothing and get back on their feet. And in some times, and done in the wrong way, it's more of an attractant than it is a help, and we have to balance those things. It's an issue that I think the whole country is facing, and I will tell you what I believe is to blame for it. It is the absolute lack of inpatient long-term mental health care.
Mm-hmm. That happened to our state back when Bentley was governor. Yeah,
you know, they reduced Bryce by a third mm-hmm. of its capacity, closed down Searcy. Mm-hmm. It is a terrible situation that has to be addressed. You know, I'm thankful for the Big Ten and the mayor's group that I'm a part of. We met with Senator Tuberville and really highlighted that as an issue. When you're looking at the future of our state and future major problems that we're facing, it's not in the future. It's right now. We have a complete lack of that long-term inpatient mental health care. So many of these people that are living on the streets in Tillman's Corner and everywhere else should probably be there, should probably be getting around-the-clock care because they're not getting it on the street.
Yeah, and you mentioned it in discussions with people from the city in the past and other people that work in this world. There is a split. And how to figure out, you can't ride down the road and look at that person, but there are people who you can help. They're, they're in a bad strait, but if you do X, Y, and Z and some ID and these programs, you get people back off the street, back into homes. And then there's, the other group that they don't want it. People say, well, if they just were given, there's some folks that just don't want it.
They just don't. And, look, I wish we'd reinstitute the CCC. Do you know that program?
Mm-mm.
Civilian Conservation Corps. It took
Like WPA and CCC and
beautiful stuff. Built all of our state and national parks.
Yeah, go look at Cheehaw. Go look at Monsanto. Yeah,
you can see their footprint all through the state and all through the country. And it took folks that were out of work and having difficulties and gave them room and board, gave them something to do mm-hmm. and be proud of, gave them money to stick in their pocket while also sending some back home.
Mm-hmm.
To your family, to your mom, your wife, whoever it might be. That was a good program, but one of the few, I think, very successful government programs in our country's history. But we've got to find the answer as a nation and here locally as well. And look, just because nobody else has been able to solve the problem doesn't mean we can't. I believe truly in Mobile that there are some things happen with gun violence, homelessness, that while nobody's ever found the answer, we can. And we have a team mentality in Mobile, with the chamber, with our corporate partners within our government, that level of cooperation is what it is going to take to do that. And so, a Safer Communities Task Force is something I'm working on. We have this homeless initiative that we are absolutely working on every day. Like, I wish I could tell you I've got the magic wand to wave today. I don't. But there's no tool I'm not willing to use to fix it.
All right, coming right back, and I wanted to continue as we wrap up about public safety. On with Mayor Spiro Chiriagatis. Your text, welcome at 251-343-0106.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:50, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Continuing our conversation with Mobile's Mayor Spiro Chiriagatis. Yeah, talk about public safety here. And I'll lead in with this. I'd like your opinion on it since you're the chief's boss. After the shootings on Joe Kane Day, which I pointed out, I was down there on Joe Kane Day, wasn't there at 11 o'clock at night. But there were MPD and Sheriff's Department folks everywhere. I mean, to the point that I noticed, and I'll use a term that's not the mayor using, still dirt bags be doing dirt bag stuff. And at that point, I'm at a loss because even though I did hear MPD took one guy out that was going for his pistol and going to do it, but you can't, if somebody's going to go down there and shoot, I don't know what do you do, Mayor? What do we do?
You know, it is frustrating, and being a judge and seeing the results of that kind of thinking and that willingness to pull out a gun to solve a nothing issue,
Somebody disrespected me, man.
It's crazy.
Welcome to the world.
It's maddening at times, but you can't just throw your hands up. We got to try and find the solution.
Right,
and
people were saying, like, but you couldn't have put another cop down there.
They responded to the scene of that within 20 seconds.
Yeah.
They were within eyesight of mounted police officers when that shooting that injured.
Yeah, they just don't care. There's
no thought for the future. You know, yeah. I've heard it described as like the 1 second horizon. That's about as far forward looking that some of the folks that we're talking about are. And, you know, I hope that the answer to that is the Safer Communities Task Force and what we are doing with that group.
How does that work? Can you give me like an elevator talk? We got a minute.
Yeah,
here.
Well, it's really bringing a lot of the people who are already doing so much of this work. You know, you've got Dr. Williams at South, who has that trauma-informed care at South Alabama. You got MAEF and other educational wings, Bishop State, who are trying to provide those pathways to opportunity that would be a pathway out of bad circumstances. You've got our law enforcement officials, FBI, DA's office, MPD, sheriff's office, getting all of those people in the room and say, hey, like a lot of us are doing individual things that are having some impact. How do we create a holistic program that the second we identify an individual who is most at risk to be committing that type of senseless violence, how do we pull them out?
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the first things.
That's a heavy lift.
It's a problem I don't think anyone else has ever solved, but that doesn't mean we're not going to try and solve it.
Okay.
We had a meeting last night. I'm terribly encouraged after that meeting at how much vigor everybody is bringing to the table. Knowledge and ability and resources that they're bringing to the table to address this issue. We've got a couple of pilot programs going right now at Williamson and LaFleur. Thankful for the cooperation of the MCPSS and their team. We're creating safe passage between school and home for kids. That's a place where a mm-hmm. lot of bad things happen. Oftentimes to some of our rec centers. So there's after school care, mentorship, soft skills training. But what we're really doing is we're identifying those kids that are most at risk and we're intervening with their families. We're getting the family involved. We're identifying what the root cause is. And one thing we have to do with so many young people is convince them that they're valuable, that they have value, that they do have pathways to a life that they want to live, because that seems hopeless for many of them. You know, we've got people living in conditions with circumstances, kids. I mean, these are children.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about 10, 12 years old. That's a kid. And they're dealing with adult problems and adult issues that most of us living our regular life can't imagine. And so we got to grab those kids and we got to put them on a track. And I still have not found a better way to say this, but in the city of Mobile, we have never had more opportunity for that D student to become wealthy, to build yes. true wealth with the amount of industry we have, the jobs training, workforce development programs we have. You can take a student who struggled academically. School wasn't for them.
Mm-hmm.
College is never really in their sights. We can get them into the workforce development stream and have them hired at Austell, Airbus. I just left SSAB. We can have them working those jobs, making, I mean, $60,000 a year for a lot of the people we're talking about, life-changing money.
Yeah.
They can't imagine.
And they can end up, if they do it right, they can end up making six figures.
Quick.
Yeah.
Within 2 to 3 years.
See, and so that's the thing. I run out of time, but I've talked with Bradley Byrne about it many times. We said, well, we're trying to get the workers in. I said, here's my pitch. We're going to go into high schools, and we're not going to talk about lofty. We're going to say, who here wants to make $60,000 next year? Who here in 2 years wants to make $80,000? Hey, by the way, here's the car you could get. Here's the house you could
get.
Don't even sell it. Just sell it on. Because I was a mush brain 17-year-old. If you'd have come in and said, you can next year make that kind of money, I'm like, and I get $25. I got $25 to my name, and I could.
Can't
yes.
imagine.
Like, just sell it that way almost.
Who wants to be able to buy a brand new car next
bingo.
Year? Your own dime.
Right. We can talk about all the reasons and it's great for community and all that, but almost sell it to a kid like, who wants to make this money? Me. Okay, do this and this and this, and you're making that money.
I've said it. Look, I think what we really need is more 19-year-olds just graduated last year pulling up in a brand new truck
mm-hmm.
to go visit their friends from
yep.
last year. And, man, what are you doing?
Yep.
Where have you been? Oh, well, I'm working over at Airbus, yes. And I'm learning how to, you know, weld airplane parts together, or create a new, you know, Airbus 321, and yeah. I love it. It's great. It's a great place to work, and I'm making all this money.
I got my insurance. I've got retirement, and I'm making this. I remember those days, like the guy, my buddies who went into the trades and looking at those guys going, like, we were scraping by on nothing, and they're like, oh, yeah, we're taking a fishing trip. I'm getting a guide. I'm like, I don't have money for gas, you know?
No kidding.
So maybe, I don't know, sell it that way. I don't know how we brand that, but.
Look, we're thinking about that all the time, and I agree with you. You know, let's show the fruits and results of that. I hope that on the public safety level that we're going to be able to show some fruits out of this Safer Communities Task Force. We might change the name from task force. I want there to be accomplishable goals, visible results.
Yeah. What is it? Yeah. What point do we reach when you go, there's been success here?
And if I can take 25 of the highest risk youth in our community that are probably most of them already involved in gang activity and bad things, and I can have 12 of them working at Airbus in a couple of years, that's a win of proportions that, you know, it'll help me sleep well at night and know that I've done something in this world if we can get there, and I believe we can.
I think a lot of people will feel that same way. Mayor, good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure, Sean.
All right. We'll get you back in here soon. Talk more about this with the mayor. All right. Hour number two on the way. 251-343-0106.